Happy April Fool's Day. That's the entire show right there. This is episode 182 of the Open Paddock Podcast. And I would just like to tell you all that Tony George is not the at-large selection for the new IndyCar competition committee. Indeed, it is Robin Miller. This is Open Paddock 182 for April 1st, 2013, and there's not a lot going on in the world of motorsports right now, but I'm joined tonight by Mike Weitzel.
Good evening, everybody.
And Mike Shaw.
Howdy, everyone.
And actually, that was the April Fool's joke. Robin Miller is not on the competition committee, as expected.
Yeah.
But you know who is on the competition committee?
Me.
Doug Patterson, and that's why he's not here.
Ah, yes, that's true.
Doug is actually on his way to Indianapolis right now to meet with Mark Miles. They decided that they wanted to have a blogger and someone with a lot of Mazda Road to Indy connections come join the crew, and Mr. Anderson recommended Doug for that position, and I have to say we're all really proud of him.
He's come a long way since he started doing this motorsport stuff with Open Paddock. Quite impressed.
Yeah, I'm really happy for him. So, Doug, we wish you all the best. Thank you for being a part of this, and we look forward to your input on the new IndyCar competition committee.
Yeah, I can't help but say, you know, I was browsing the track forum today and saw the indication that Robin Miller was going to be on the competition committee. And I didn't even open the thread.
Yeah. My only response to that was LOL. It's like, seriously, that's what you're going to draw?
Yeah. This is the day, April 1st, where you don't believe anything you read unless you just sit there and ponder it for a little bit. Nobody breaks anything major today. I mean, this is the day that you just kind of ignore the media and wait till tomorrow and see what was true and what wasn't.
You know, I thought that the whole, I saw this piece on the news this morning about Google Shipping. Have you seen that?
No.
It's actually a new shipping service that Google is going to start trying out, and they're doing their betas for it right now in the San Francisco area.
Oh, yeah, it's same-day shipping on purchases.
I thought that was their April Fool's Day prank for this year.
Yeah. Google's...
No, they were actually serious about that.
Well, here's even the crazier thing. Walmart's competition to that, because Walmart is recognizing that, say, Amazon is a huge competitor right now. And they're getting into this online purchasing and everything like that. They're considering, and they're doing pilots of it, where they will, as you're checking out at Walmart, they'll see your address and say, hey, you live pretty close to this person that just ordered this package online. Will you deliver the package for us?
Huh.
And then they'll give you a discount to your purchase.
Seriously?
Interesting.
Yeah, well, it's a strange world. Now, last year, Google's April Fool's thing was hilarious because they went through Google Maps and they played around with it a little bit and made it similar to the interface that was in Dragon Warrior on the Nintendo Entertainment System. So, you know, the entire map, the United States map, the world map was done in the little 8-bit character sprites, you know, that they did with little mountains here and lakes here and all this kind of stuff and little cities. And they had all kinds of text and all this kind of stuff that was reminiscent from the games. It was hilarious.
Yeah, this year they did a treasure map style.
Yeah, that was a little less interesting to me just because the nostalgia factor from last year was awesome. But it is what it is.
Yeah, the Google Nose was their prank this year.
Yep.
That was pretty lame.
Yeah. You know, when people are expecting a joke, you really have to do a good job or else it's just bleh, you know? Yeah. Anyway, this is Open Paddock. This is an interesting week. We don't have a whole lot going on. Some stuff on IndyCar, Oval Rookie Testing, and some Barber Preview. Some stuff with WRC. Loeb's going to be helping Robert Kubica out with his introductory run in the WRC. And he's also going to be taking on Pike's Peak in a Peugeot 206, or was it 208? I can't
208.
208. 208, 208. Yeah. 206 is a bit dated. Anyway, and in F1, they're talking about possibly running Thailand in 2015, but hey, everybody's on that F1 bandwagon, so do we expect to see it? We'll talk about it. But we do have some miscellaneous stuff from all these other forms of motorsports that things are going on in that's keeping us mildly entertained. Not a whole lot, just some.
You know, I was even disappointed this week when there wasn't like even like Supercross on or anything. It's like Saturday night I was looking for some. I normally always turn it on Supercross on Saturday nights, and it wasn't there. I'm like, I has a sad.
Yeah, my entertainment for the weekend on the television was what is it? It's Kingsford Barbecue Pitmasters on the USA Destination Network or whatever it is.
That sounds delicious.
It is awesome. I've like recorded several of these. They're from the past several years because I just found the show and I was like, this is great. It's a barbecuing competition. You know? 3 pitmasters come in every week. One comes out with $2,000. You
know? And you get the, is thrown and, into the pit.
And yeah, and then you get to see them baste the brisket. You know, it's awesome.
Well, I guess the first bit of miscellaneous racing news we could talk about is we've got a few things pertaining to Formula E going on here. And they say a race in Monaco is going to happen.
Hey, that's an interesting one. Okay, first we scroll down through this article and see it came out on the 31st of March. So this is possibly true.
What time zone?
Yeah, exactly. What time? I really don't know what to think about this Formula E thing. If you're going to run a street race in Monaco, you better do it around the Grand Prix.
Yep.
Because otherwise it's not going to be cordoned off for racing. Just have to wait and see on this one. Obviously, they're trying to go after all these major markets. Supposedly, they have something like 20 different markets that are interested in joining in with this championship. I mean, we're not talking about a whole lot of power in these things. We're talking about maybe 150 to 300 horsepower, but it's in an electric motor. So that makes it a little bit more interesting because you got your 0 to 60 in like a blink of an eyeball.
Yeah.
When they're throwing out names like they are, they're going to be racing next year with Formula E. They're going to be racing in Rome, Los Angeles, Miami, Beijing, Buenos Aires, Rio de Janeiro, and in Malaysia. London's going on that list as well. Potentially, you're also talking about Monaco. I mean, there's some blue-chip cities involved in this, and I haven't heard a whole lot about how the logistics of this are going to happen. It makes me wonder if they're not going to tune these cars down so much that they don't really need to do much in the way of safety for these vehicles for these events.
Yeah, and especially like if you're talking about Monaco, where you really have very little margin of error.
Yeah,
and I mean you're going to have to entice some teams to even do this to begin with. And I'm assuming that really one of their goals, too, is to keep costs low, which means keeping crash damage down.
Yeah. And they're saying that, you know, we've got, you know, Miami and New York and their, or excuse me, Miami and Los Angeles, and potentially a third U.S. date for next year, potentially New York.
Miami. Where would you do it in Miami? Would they resurrect the old Bicentennial Park circuit, or would they go down to Homestead, Miami, and run the road course there, or what?
Everything I've read about this Formula E championship, this FIA's Formula E championship, is basically saying they're going to be running on city street course events.
Mm-hmm.
They're not targeting, you know, road courses or ovals or anything like that. It's all going to be city street course events. There's a message they want to take with their racing, you know, that's clean and all this kind of stuff. And it sounds like the message they want to deliver is only in city street racing.
Hmm. So does the clean include all the diesel trucks that have to, you know, put in all the barricades and, you know, the forklifts and all that stuff, spewing out stuff?
Yeah, well, you know, that's...
or the exhaust from the planes used to ship the cars.
Exactly. You know, you can only greenwash a racing series. You can't really make a racing series green unless, you know, you buy up all these super carbon credits. And,
right.
Hey, for every race we run, we plant, you know, 40,000 trees in the Amazonian rainforest and, yeah, buy carbon offsets and what have you. The Formula E Championship, even going on from that, Michelin is going to supply the tires. That has been announced. I mean, things are coming together for this. I'm really interested to see where this goes. I mean, is this just going to be a blip on the radar and nobody really cares? Or is this going to be aggressively promoted because it is, you know, seen as maybe the future of automotive design?
Well, you know, I have to throw in, and we'll be talking about this a little bit later when we get into rally stuff, but Pikes Peak... they've been doing some electric stuff coming up that now.
Yeah, yeah.
So we'll talk more about that later. But, yeah, I see more and more of this starting to take hold. I can see it becoming a reality, but I figured they would have started out smaller, you know, and then kind of work their way up. To say that they're going to jump in and be in Monaco already and stuff like that, and throwing all these different, you know, locations out, that sounds a little ambitious.
Yeah, it makes you kind of cringe a little bit because you just don't, hey, we're going to have this championship and then suddenly, you know, you have, you know, these major blue chip cities announced as events on your schedule.
Right.
So it makes me think that the scale of these events is going to be severely toned down, and they're more like exhibitions with, you know, with a little dicing side by side, but not going very fast. Because, yeah, you know, what all do you have to close down to make these races happen? And is just having a few electric cars running around in a parking lot what we're going to see?
Racing golf carts.
Coming. I know what it is. It's the International Boat Sport and Travel Show series. They're going to go to like the Miami fairgrounds and be there the same weekend as the Boat Sport and Travel Show and be out there in golf carts with you know big old front wings on them.
The cars will actually be transported in the back of Robbie Gordon's new truck series. And as the trucks jump over a certain ramp on the course, they are allowed to launch the Formula E car.
Nice.
At strategic intervals during the race.
Yeah.
Or something.
Yeah, some people launch and some people land. And one person who has landed well.
Awesome segue.
You like that? Mike Conway has landed himself a WEC drive with Delta ADR.
Number 26 Orca 3 Nissan.
Very cool. So he's going to be driving an LMP2 in WEC. And yeah, that's a pretty good get for him.
That's exactly where he needs to be too.
Yeah.
And Conway is a really good driver. I mean, I want to make that perfectly clear. Mike Conway is an awesome driver. He just doesn't particularly need to be in Indy cars if he is not going to drive ovals.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. He'll do a cameo here and there in IndyCar.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to do Long Beach. He'll probably snag a few more rides than that.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, definitely his days of doing IndyCar are over full-time. But LMP, a WEC ride is perfect for him because it really showcases his talents.
Yeah. I'm very interested to see how this goes for him. I mean, the WEC, I think, is growing in stature. It's pretty much eclipsing the European Le Mans Series, because he had a lot of these teams that raced the European Le Mans Series and did cameos, you know, occasional races here in the States, or, you know, obviously the big daddy at Le Mans. But, you know, as far as things go, they once the WEC started, they targeted the WEC events and started dropping some of these European Le Mans Series races. So, yeah, the WEC is the big dog now in the sports car world. And it's good that Conway got a seat, got a drive in that. And moving forward, you know, it's going to be fun to watch his career continue to develop, because we know it's a dead end in IndyCar. If he's not going to race ovals, he's done here.
Yeah, let me tell you this, too. Conway's a good guy.
Yeah.
He's very personable to be around. He's not... He's kind of a quiet guy, but he's when you finally get him to open up, he's a lot of fun to talk to. And
you have to respect a guy that, you know, he's able to stand up and, you know, he knows what his limits are.
Yeah.
It affected him. He had, you know, a big crash at Indy, broke his back, came back from it, had another scare, and just kind of said, you know, I'm spooked by this. I'm having trouble with it mentally. I'm no good here. I'm done. I don't want to do this anymore. And more power to him. Good idea.
Exactly. And when you see, like, you know, when the organizers go and, you know, pack in all the extra cars and stuff they did at the fatal race for Dan Weldon.
Yeah.
You know, do stupid stuff like that. Why would you want to do an oval? You know.
Well, I mean, he was in that accident as well.
Yeah.
I mean that. Yeah, I have total respect for him, and I think this is a good move for him. I'm happy for him.
Yeah. So what do you guys... go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, speaking of international series like that, making moves, the I guess I'm going to start calling it the USCAR Alliance there, Grand Am and IMSA,
mm-hmm.
have announced that they are going to go into a cooperative agreement with the International Tour and Wagon Rennen, which administers the DTM series.
Could you say that again?
International Tour and Wagon Rennen.
Tour and Wagon.
I am not German, sir. I am Irish.
See, I'm even throwing a little lilt in there from Scandinavian language. Tour and Wagen. There you go.
The nice. The German girl I work with is okay with me saying Winland for her last name.
Mm, I see.
Even though I have a feeling it's very much like Tristan Vaudier.
Here's what
that's good enough.
Here's some interesting things to think about with DTM coming to the States. I like DTM. I know a lot of people have said, well, DTM's kind of crappy because, you know, once these cars bang into each other, they knock off all their racy bits, and the next thing you know, they start dropping through the pack. And, you know, it's not nearly as, say, interesting as British Touring Car or something like that, because there's less contact. You know, the other side of that is, you've got a series, this USCAR Alliance, that is focused towards endurance racing. The occasional shorter race, but you're focused towards endurance racing. DTM isn't. DTM is kind of like the Formula One of, you know, of touring cars.
Yeah, touring cars, yeah.
So you're talking shorter races, tuned more towards a television spectator audience.
Wait. So you're telling me that DTM is a lot like the way Grand Am is set up?
Yeah. No.
I was actually overhearing some of this.
Trans Am in my mind.
Yeah.
Like Trans Am was. Shorter races, sprint type style. Well, I shouldn't say sprint, but you know what I mean. You're not switching drivers and crap like that. It's, yeah.
Yeah, I was actually hearing when they were talking about this, they were saying that, you know, they're actually targeting like a 90-minute time mm-hmm. for the races, specifically to target television. Mm-hmm. And yeah, they just want to really hit that market. What I found interesting, though, and somewhat disappointing, is I thought they were going to kind of start out by bringing some of the European DTM guys over here. Mm-hmm. And instead, they're creating a brand new thing here in the States.
Hmm.
It's not going to be the guys from over there just coming over here and running a few, you know, a few of the events, you know, stateside. It is an entire DTM series for the United States. And
starting from scratch.
Yep. And slightly different rules where they can't just bring a car over. They'll have to do some changes to it if they did. Not major, but I guess it's supposed to be somewhat similar. But yeah, but I was hearing it's not the actual just DTM coming to visit. It is a brand new series from scratch.
See, and in my mind, I'm a bit more excited by that from the standpoint of I like this style of racing. I like what I see in V8 Supercar. I like what I see in British Touring Car. I like what I see in DTM. I'm just not invested in the guys. I'm not invested in the tracks that they race on all that much. I think bringing a touring car series over here, a touring car series that isn't, you know, the occasional race that they do that's a shorter race like they do in Grand Am or ALMS, you know, you occasionally have a 2-hour and 45-minute race, but you still have all the baggage of the driver changes and some of the garbage that they do in there that doesn't lend itself towards, say, a television spectator audience. It lends itself more towards, you know, lends more towards these endurance events and, you know, the fans that are used to that kind of stuff. It doesn't lend to itself on TV when you have, you know, like three driver names going across on the crawl on the top of the screen. You're trying to figure out which car they're in. Well, it just says the driver name. It doesn't say what car.
Right.
And then you see the crawl a little bit later and it's a different driver name, but you're still not identifying with the car. It's like, ah!
Or to go with the German, ach nun lieber!
Mein Leben!
Lederhosen.
For all your Wolfenstein fans out there. anyway, I like this idea. You know, I like the idea of getting you know, these type of races happening on American tracks. So, very cool.
But it's not supposed to kick off till 2016, I think they said, right? That was
yep.
the target?
Yeah.
Right. So
let's get on with the IndyCar news, gents. We've got a little rookies turning some laps at TMS action going on.
Yeah, you had Tristan Vadier running at the 1.5 mile high bank. You had, who else was there? AJ Allmendinger was
Munoz.
There. Carlos Munoz is going to be running for Andretti at the 500 this year. Yeah. They're all entered for the Indianapolis 500. This is, you know, oval rookie orientation, not at the Speedway yet. That's coming up very shortly, though. And when that happens, I believe it's like April 11th when they start ROP, something like that. And we'll know for sure, you know, who all is a rookie that's going to be trying to compete this year.
Yeah, also at the track at TMS where Ed Carpenter, Takuma Sato, Graham Ray Hall, Simon Pagenaud, and James Jakes getting some laps in. Looks like the temperature was, it was kind of windy out there, so that kind of negates a lot of
active
development, really.
Yeah, takes out the development, but you still got the guys who need to get some seat time, getting some valuable experience, and you know, racing.
Exactly.
Racing in the wind is an issue, at least at some of the corners in Indianapolis. some corners have this wall around them, though.
Speaking of rookies at Indianapolis, there's a lot of speculation around one that we talked to not too long ago.
Yes. I guess Mr. Connor Daly, they're basically saying things are closing in on a confirmed seat with A.J. Foyt. Foyt was pretty much tongue-in-cheek saying, yeah, he's going to be with us. We just haven't announced it yet in his own.
Yeah, and I texted Connor a while back asking him about that. Let me pull that up real quick because the response was pretty good. Let's see, he said, there it is, he said, LOL, can't comment on that, ! Wink.
Okay, we'll read into that what you will.
So yeah, it's basically a worst kept secret kind of thing. Reported by the Indianapolis Star, Speed TV had an article about it as well. So they're all basically saying this is going to happen. So for Connor Daly,
I've really got the feeling too that I'm about to run into him at some point in this coming weekend.
Well, did you guys hear that Connor got to go out to Malaysia and race over there?
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, did GP2 and had a really good finish.
Yeah, yeah. So that was he just got a surprise phone call that, oh crap, I get to go where?
Well, and I know one of the problems with him doing Indy is the fact that on the opening weekend of Indy is a GP3 race, so he would miss a couple of days of practice at Indy.
Yeah, and opening weekend be a GP3 race in Barcelona. All that other stuff. I mean, it doesn't coincide well with the schedule, but if you're talking about a GP3 race compared to...
Well, GP3 is the commitment.
Yeah. Compared to the Indianapolis 500, I can see you writing your commitment in a certain way such that you are racing at Indy.
Yeah. And there's no GP3 at Monaco this year, so that frees that up.
Ah, okay.
So no more 4 a.m. flights through the air for Mr. Daly on Monaco. Ugh,
that was scary, man. Car flipping like that. Ugh.
Another change this year, speaking of Indy and the Brickyard 400, is infield parking regulations.
You mean all the drunken hooligans that get free parking in the middle of the speedway, they actually have to pay in advance?
Yes, and that is such a shame.
Yeah.
They pay for all those new lights that they want.
Yeah. I don't see any problem with them charging for parking in the infield. What it does, though, there's this long-standing tradition of parking your car out on 16th Street trying to get into the track so you can get infield parking. And you're lining up at 4 a.m., and that gate opens, and it stays open until they fill up, and then it shuts. And that's just been this long-standing thing. You're not going to have that line because now you've got parking passes that you've already purchased. Mm-hmm. They just went on sale. I got an email about that from the Speedway saying, hey, buy your passes now, whatever. So,
well, a lot of it, too, I believe, is the gentrification of the infield.
Eh. Dude, a couple years ago, a buddy of mine had the binoculars out, kind of watching cars as they went by, and the next thing you know, he did a double take because he was staring at some dude's junk, staring at him from turn three, as he just kind of looked both ways, saw all these people watching the cars, stuck it through the fence, and relieved himself.
Yay! I discovered that a friend of mine is DJ in the snake pit this year.
Oh, very cool.
My buddy Topher, who is an Indianapolis native, is one of the three DJs playing in the snake pit on race day this year. So, I've already hollered at him about getting together while I'm up there. Yeah, that's a good southern term. more Indy news. The company of Zach Brown is up for sale. That is correct. The Zach Brown Band is now for sale despite their Grammy success. He has decided to come off the road and quit touring in order to become the new IndyCar CEO.
Well, we'll not read too much into this. Zach Brown sold off his majority shareholding in Just Marketing back in like 2008.
Yeah.
And it's not his shares that are going up for sale. It's Spire Capital Partners is selling their 60% stake in the company. This really has nothing to do with Zach Brown. Spire Capital is an investment company, and yeah, they buy things to sell them.
When is his next album supposed to be out?
I don't know. We'll find out next week on Inside the Music.
Right.
But as far as things, well, let's keep going with that, because we've got very blunt comments from Mark Miles about Zach Brown. Speaking about him, Miles says, Zach's got a complicated life that he's got to sort out, and we've also got to do our due diligence. We continue to learn about each other and how we think, and he can speak for himself. He's got other interests, and this is not a part-time gig, so we've got to, you know, we've got to wait and see. Zach Brown has a lot of options. He has a lot of irons in the fire. He's already a pretty rich man from just marketing. He's constantly flying overseas to Europe to deal with Formula One sponsorship stuff that he's still involved with through Just Marketing. And he was recently...
Common belief is he is the successor to Bernie Ecclestone.
You know, see, that's the thing. He was recently considering a full-time move to London to really concentrate on his F1 clients. But he's also in discussion with IndyCar. So I imagine he's looking at a lot of different options, and he's just trying to figure out what is the best thing for him moving forward. I hate to be this way. I'd love it if, you know, somebody who was highly skilled came in and sat down in that chair for IndyCar, but I can't see that he would be better coming to IndyCar.
Yeah.
Than staying with what he's doing and continuing to sell sponsorship in F1. I mean, he legitimately has been mentioned on several occasions as a potential successor for Bernie Ecclestone. Don't know if that's ever going to happen. But, you know, that's a lot better company to keep than IndyCar is right now.
Indeed it is. I guess it's time for a little Barber preview then. What you say?
I would say, what are your activities coming up this week? I hear strange rumors about your visage appearing on television.
Yes, if you are located in the Birmingham, Alabama TV market, on Wednesday night at 6:30, I will be a guest on Alabama Tonight on Channel 13 with Don Hawes, which is the local NBC affiliate. We will be discussing a little Higpa on there that night.
Huh?
Higpa.
What's that?
Honda Indy Grand Prix of Alabama.
Ah, okay. Okay. All up in your acronyms.
We will also be tempting Kate Guerra from IndyCar with the free ice cream in the media center at Barber. She's already mentioned that twice today on Twitter, so Kate, we're looking out for you here. Yeah, that's actually one of the treats at Barber, is in the media center. There's a giant cooler in the back with loaded down with Barber ice cream in it, obviously, for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
Let's see. I'll be at the track on Thursday for the media day, and that's a Grand Am practice day as well. Let's see, Friday is IndyCar practice and Grand Am qualifying. Saturday is IndyCar qualifying and Grand Am races. And then Sunday is obviously IndyCar and what's left of Indy Lots.
Series formerly known as Indy Lights.
Hoping to meet up with the crew at Ballardi while I'm out there. And I've actually already got an appointment with the people at Magnus to talk to them, my favorite Grand Am team. So it's going to be fun. It's going to be a good weekend out there. It's supposed to be lower 70s and sunny instead of the overcast and barely 50 that it was for the open test.
Yeah, I wonder how the tires will hold up in the warmer weather. It seems like those reds sure dropped off pretty quick out there on the street course. But this is such a smoother tarmac that I bet they hold up quite a bit better.
Yeah, that was one thing I was about to say, is the fact that the streets of St. Petersburg are essentially a cheese grater. and Barber is pretty much like a Teflon countertop now with a little bit more grip. The temperature is not going to be so much that it'll kill your horsepower, especially with the morning qualifying session on Saturday. So with the combination of the little bit cooler temperatures on Saturday morning for qualifying and actually having red tires for once, I'm saying that track record is going down by about 5 seconds.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah, the qualifying they did, or the testing they did was amazing how much faster they were. That was pretty
when you're hitting 106s on blacks, with the track record previously having been a 110.
Wow.
Yeah, they're going to lose. I remember talking to Hinchcliffe out there, and he's like, and Elio said the same thing. It's like, you know, we're going to lose at least another second off the track time just simply by having the reds on.
There should be some great passing with that kind of grip.
Yeah, and it's going to, let me tell you this too, it's going to be some very, how should I say, testicular related maneuvering. Because simply for the sheer speed that you're carrying around the turns at Barber.
Yeah. You had that 5 seconds a lot. I mean, that's impressive speed to be holding through those corners. So that will make things very interesting.
Consider that you're pushing 4 to 5 G's in those turns at Barbernail.
Wow.
What I'm going to be interested to see is how the two-seater rides lap times compare into qualifying for IndyCar last year.
The two-seater?
Yeah, the two-seater. Well, the little two-seater that they give the track rides.
Yeah, okay, the one they give for the, okay, the Honda thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder never mind. I won't go there. Anyway, move forward. Hey, Hinch got congratulated by by his fellow Canadians. The Legislative Assembly of Ontario followed up his win by recognizing him for his achievement. Kevin Flynn, the chairman of the Committee on Finance and Economic Affairs, and also the parliamentary assistant to the Minister of Transportation, read a congratulatory note on the floor of the full legislature.
Yeah, Hinch is...
make it very official.
Yes, indeed. Thank you for winning. You're the best thing that's happened to Canada since Bryan Adams.
You're the best around. He's the first Canadian since, 2006 to win a race?
Hmm.
Paul Tracy in Cleveland, I think.
Wow. That's been that long, hasn't it? Because Serbia hasn't won anything. Tagliani hasn't won anything in a while.
Yeah.
I was actually looking at that in the track side earlier, and Tagliani actually has the longest streak for anybody in IndyCar right now since their last win. And because Tag's last win was in 2004.
Hmm.
Of course, Serbia's last win was in 2005.
He's come close.
Close only counts in horseshoes and hand grenades, sir.
There you go.
Second place is first loser.
If you're not first, you're lashed.
Right.
So do you think it's going to be all Chevy lineup on the front of the grid?
Well, first off, I'm going to hit up Monica Hilton over at Barracuda Racing and see if I can put a Bobcat in Tag's car for the weekend.
Nice.
If any of you watch Talladega Nights, you'll get that, thank God.
Yep.
I can see it being another Chevy parade. In fact, I remember in a contest not too long ago, I put my top five for Barber in there, and I had Will Power first, and Dixon second, Dixon being my only Honda in the top five, because I had it rounded out by Hinch, TK, and Simona.
Wow.
Yeah, I think Simona gets a top five this week.
I think she does, too.
I'll be very impressed by that. I mean, you know, you see guys like Hinch and Simona, gals like Simona. You see Takuma Sato get back up there again this weekend. I'll be very impressed if they can maintain that form that they showed at the last race.
Yeah, the thing that's going to be the key for Sato, though, is he has actually never completed a race at Barber.
Oh, man. That's rough.
There's a lot of tight corners. A lot of gravel there.
Well, and there's also a couple of blind crests there, isn't there?
Yeah.
A lot of blind crests.
Yeah. And that's, you got to be ready for that. Your grip goes away, and you got to know what to do when falling away, and all of a sudden the course turns the other direction.
Yeah, there's a lot of spots at Barber that create negative G-force, which kind of makes it interesting. Because, like, going into Charlotte's Web, which is the Turn 5 complex, otherwise known as the hairpin to most people, there is actually a small crest going down into that turn. So you hit that crest, and then as soon as you come over the crest, you're on the brakes.
Nice.
To make that turn.
So if you're not maybe nerfing the brakes before you hit that crest, you carry too much speed over that crest, your wheels come up off of the shocks a little bit, and the next thing you know, you're kind of oversteering through the corner.
Yep, you're sitting in the middle of the spotter and behind the sand trap.
Sorry, understeering, yeah. Understeering through the corner. Got my words wrong.
I don't know, you could always Tanner Faust it and, like, try to plant the nose in the middle of the hairpin and swing the back around.
Nice.
Qualifying, it's going to be the Willpower show once again. Even though Power
didn't deserve it after what happened at... in Florida, so.
Willpower, the moving ramp.
Yeah. Oh. Hildebrand, man. I mean, the number of mistakes he made. He was having such a bad day. You know, and we all have bad days, and I don't know what, something else must have been on his mind. I kind of felt bad for him, but too bad for everybody else that was in his way.
Maybe if Power knows what's good for him, he'll go to a JR's car and stick like a parking ticket on it or something.
Yeah.
Little knowledge there. That's pretty much all I've got for Barber coming up, though.
Good deal.
Be on the lookout for the Willpower show, basically.
Be on the lookout for Willpower taking the win with an outside chance of somebody like Simona.
And if you're not following me on Twitter, you need to make sure you're doing that, because I will be tweeting from the track. So that's at Kevin Neely. You can find it on the Open Paddock website at www.openpaddock.net. Bam.
Way to slide that in there.
So, Mr. Shaw?
Some rally news, there hasn't been an actual rally event.
I see where you've got Robert Kubica is getting advice from Sebastian Loeb.
Yeah, actually, we've got quite a few things to talk about with Mr. Loeb. Sure, he's gone from rally, officially retired from the WRC. However, he's going to be jumping in and helping out with Robert Kubica, who has like 40 miles ever on gravel experience.
Yeah.
And that was in a Group N car. So now, if you guys remember, Kubica is going to be doing the WRC2, which is the normally aspirated 2-liter four-wheel drive cars. So that used to be called the Super 2000s. So he is a Citroen factory-backed driver. And so they called in Sebastian Loeb to help him out and give him a little bit of knowledge on the gravel and how to handle it. But, you know, the one thing that has made Loeb so good on gravel is because he treats it like tarmac. He has been faster than the Finns because he treats it like a tarmac event. Sliding sideways slows you down. You want to minimize that as much as you can. So I'm going to estimate Kubica's not going to do too bad at this.
Well, especially if he's getting pointers from somebody who knows how to drive on gravel in that particular way. So.
Exactly. So it'll be interesting to see. We're still a couple weeks out for that event, but that's in April. That'll be Portugal, Rally Portugal. So hopefully it won't be the SOG Fest that it was last year, where Mikko Hirvonen won just because everybody else slid off the road at some point and wrecked, Loeb rolled, and yeah, it was just a slop fest of mud. Miko won, but then had the win taken away from him because of parts that were not that were on his car that were not yeah,
not quite felt, compliant.
Exactly. And
what was it? What was it? A,
there were two things.
A lever of some sort.
One of them was a. They thought possibly the turbo was a little bit bigger than it should have been. The turbo outlet, and then the other part was the clutch.
Yeah, it was something, and it really didn't have anything to do with the function of the part. It was just wasn't the homologated part.
It wasn't had, the homologated one, and they're just such sticklers for that. And
I think the it actually was worse for them because it was the it was a part that didn't have as many lightning holes drilled into it.
Exactly. That's exactly what. Yep. And. Yeah, it was pretty sad that that was taken away from when. I think it was the part that was used like when the car's in transportation or whatever. They just throw this one on there, and then you know they replace it. They're supposed to replace it out, and somebody forgot to. And yeah, it was a crap call, but you know, whatever. So yeah, so that's a couple of weeks from now. Other news with Sebastian Loeb. So you know, he of course left. Rally to go into the GT Racing Series stuff, touring car type of thing over in Europe there. And he, of course, well, at first, we thought he won. Him and his teammate that we traded cars with, Patante, don't know that guy, or Perante. Anyways, he thought they had won by 5 seconds there, but apparently... As Loeb was going into the pits to change drivers with him, he had loosened his seat belts too early.
Mm.
Yeah, 30-second penalty. So suddenly after they thought they had won, they're now showing them as 13th place.
Oops.
What's ironic about that is a number of years ago in the rally in Italy that they had a replay of Daniel Lehne had removed his seatbelts too early, and they got a penalty there, two-minute penalty, and it dropped them down to fourth. So they didn't win that event, even though they thought they had won. Of course, he still won the championship that year, so it didn't really matter. But that's Loeb for you, right? But speaking of Loeb, the exciting thing about that is he's going to make a return to the United States. Not at X Games like he did last year where he just stomped everybody, but he's gotten – so if you know Citroën and Peugeot are tied together, well, Peugeot's making a special 208 116T or whatever it is, specially designed Pikes Peak car. So Sebastian Loeb will be coming to Pikes Peak.
Yeah, this is cool. I mean, we've seen this the last couple of years. We've had, why is my brain seizing? I'm seeing the guy's face. We've had another WRC guy coming to Pikes Peak.
There was way back when, Ari Vatanen.
No, and that's not who I'm thinking of. I'm. Dang it. Sean will slap me if he hears this. Anyway, we've had attempts at Pikes Peak from WRC guys recently in, and I believe it was a Citroën last year, but it was a rallycross car that was souped up a little bit even beyond that, and didn't go so well. You know, these cars, they have to be designed special. I mean, when you're talking about running at the base, you know, at 5,000 or so feet.
Actually, I happened to actually look it up. I actually just posted an article yesterday on Open Paddock about this.
Okay.
And believe it or not, the starting altitude is 9,000 feet.
Ah, okay.
It ends at 14,000, like 300.
Okay.
So it's totally different than anything that most drivers are used to with that kind of thin air.
Well, you're starting at 9,000 feet, which is pretty high. For any event, you're ending at 14,000, and the performance of the engine just goes down exponentially as you climb up. So you have to compensate for that in certain ways, and that's part of the reason that these electric cars are doing as well as they are on Pikes Peak, because they don't get that drop off from the internal combustion engine towards the top. So
exactly, you know, that was kind of my thing I was saying about earlier about the electric stuff, and you know, it's a newer type of entry into the Pikes Peak stuff, but that's what they're running into, is that yeah, you don't get that performance drop. You know, anything that has a combustible engine, you got to get oxygen in there, and the only way to get enough oxygen is to turbo the hell out of it. But still, it's thin air. As much as you try and compress it, there's just not a lot of air up there, at least oxygen molecules. So, you know, it's definitely interesting to see the electrics try and do this. Loeb's got some interesting competition when it comes to that. Last year was last year was the first time that it became fully paved. So now we got a full tarmac from the beginning to the end of the 12.4-mile course, I believe is what it is the actual part they race on.
Yeah.
Which obviously suits Loeb really well, right, because he's the tarmac master. Last year, a brand-new course record was set, kind of unsurprisingly, with no more gravel left, right, to slow people down. But Reese Millen did it in a specially designed Hyundai Genesis Coupe, just beating out Monster Tajima. I don't know if any of you guys know who he is, but nobody has more class wins, and he's got two course records, the first one to break the 10-minute barrier to get to the...
And that was done when there was still gravel.
Yep, the top part of it, the very last part of it, was still gravel. But yeah, what that means is that what makes it so challenging is you have to have a compromise in your setup.
Yeah.
You can't have just a tarmac setup. You got to deal with this gravel that's going to be at the top. Even if it's smoother gravel, it's still gravel, right? So, yes. Yeah. So it'll be definitely really interesting to see what – obviously, Loeb doesn't go after anything unless he thinks he can – win. In his mind, winning has got to mean breaking the current record.
Yeah.
So we'll see if he can outdo what Reese Millen did. Last year, what was interesting, Monster Tajima, who's been back there so many years, I mean, the guy's got to be in his early 50s now or late 40s. I mean, but the thing is you don't have a co-driver for this. You need to memorize every turn.
Yeah.
So that makes it a bit more challenging. But, you know, yeah, so nobody knows it experience-wise better than probably Monster Tajima or Reese Millen, who's been running it a number of years. Unfortunately, Hyundai has pulled out all of the backing of racing here in the United States. So I don't know if Reese is going to be back to drive it unless Hyundai decides they want to do a one-off just to defend their title. That'll be interesting to see. Monster Tajima, he ended up experimenting with an electric car last year, and unfortunately he had problems with the car. It was a brand new design, and it never finished. But it'd be interesting to see if he, with his many, many years of experience, if his specially designed car can outdo the Peugeot that's going to be coming up with Sebastian Loeb. So I think that'll be pretty exciting to see. I don't know. Who do you think would be better at that? Is it going to be experience with a number of times of visiting it, you know, being there? Or is it just Sebastian Loeb and all his skill? Who do you think would win?
It does come down to the car. And, you know, I have to say, last year, Monster didn't do too well because Monster came in a car of basically his own design. They came out there in an electric car, and it caught fire pretty close to the start.
Yeah. There probably is no battery better than the Boeing 787 Dreamliner.
I've heard the CEO of Tesla thinks those are a bad idea.
Yeah, he didn't like the types that they were using anyway. They were using larger cells instead of a bunch of smaller ones. And anyways, yeah.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah. Anyway. Anyways, I was gonna say. So for all you out there, if you want to watch some really cool videos, I actually posted it with that article I put on the website about the Pikes Peak Hill Climb and Loeb coming. There's a thing called Climb Dance. it's a video that was done when Ari Vatanen, former WRC champion, he back in 1988 actually filmed it and did a really cool film. It was all gravel. Actually, it was all gravel at that point in time. And they've got a film of his entire run going up the mountain and with aerial shots and, you know, onboard cameras. And just going sideways in a Peugeot back then. So Peugeot's no stranger to Pikes Peak. And he created a record back in 1988. And it's a great video to watch. And then I've also got a clip of when Reese Millen won last year on the tarmac, as well as there's one other YouTube on there of the, I think it was GoPro promoted Monster Tajima when he broke the 10-minute barrier. And all of them just very well filmed and great to watch. Hill climbs are just cool.
Yeah. Okay, the driver I was thinking of that I couldn't place and I deserve to be slapped for this is Marcus Grönholm driving for.
Oh my gosh, yeah, that's right. I forgot Marcus did that. Yeah. I feel like myself.
I believe he's done that the last 2 years, if I remember right.
Well, I don't think he was there last year, was he?
Yeah, he was there last year.
Really? Because remember everything got rescheduled because of the fire? I'm sure it wasn't 2 years
may
ago.
Be right. It may have been 2 years ago.
He was doing TRC last year, and then he got hurt, remember?
Yes, you're right. So, no, it wasn't last year. Anyway, that's off the cuff.
Yeah, and of course, Monster was still using his normally aspirated stuff then and dominating, so.
Yes, back in the Suzuki SX4.
SX4, yep. Still of his own design, but man.
Does Suzuki still make cars?
I know, right?
Yes, they do. I pass a Suzuki dealership on occasion.
You're kidding me. I haven't seen one in forever.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez. Anyway.
Well, speaking of Global Rallycross and Rallycross in general, there actually was an event this last weekend. Is the opener of the Rallycross RX, which is the new naming and branding for the European Rallycross Championship, the FIA's thing there. And it was at Lytton Hill in England there. And Petter Solberg had his debut finally in his Citroen that he was out there in.
Mm-hmm.
He ended up having issues on the very first heat. Now, the second heat, he won, beating out Tanner Faust. That put him into the semifinal, unfortunately, in the semifinal, after this first lap, all of a sudden, on lap two, his steering broke. The power steering went out, and he just was fighting to keep that car on the road. When you have those grip changes between tarmac and gravel and all that stuff, I mean, just reefing that car around, he ended up not making it into the final, so... Petter Solberg did not win the very first event. Sorry.
I've had recent experience with having the power steering go out. It's not fun. I'm not strong enough for it.
You know, a car that's designed for power steering, when the power steering fails, it really sucks.
Exactly.
You know, when it's a car that is nothing but with no power steering, it's actually not so bad. But,
As long as you're... Who drive an Indy car.
Yeah. winner of that event was actually American Tanner Faust, who won it last year. So Tanner Faust gets the first win of the European Rallycross Series. So I'm sure he's very happy with that. So he gets to move on. The very next event is in 2 weeks, is going to be the Global Rallycross event down in Brazil. So he's going to be flying from Europe to Brazil to get the launch of the first GRC event. That'll be interesting to see what format they do. I'm really curious about what they're going to do about the whole jump situation this year, because last year's steel jump, that thing is just, that's there to hurt somebody.
Yeah. Yeah, I liked your comparison that you did between rallycross and traditional stage rally.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, that's another article that I posted up there this weekend. Something I've been pondering for a while is, you know, does rallycross hurt stage rally, you know, or does it help it? You know, I've heard a number of people, throw their opinions out there. And for me, I think it's totally fine. Actually, I think it benefits the sport. You have that, you know, that draw. Well, go ahead.
Well, I think it's beneficial if the guys who do rallycross then run stage rallies as well. I think it's beneficial in that. But if the guys who run Rallycross turn out to be one set of guys, and then the group of guys that are running traditional stage rallies are a completely other set of guys, you know, that promotion and marketing of the two together doesn't happen. You know, you don't get the Ken Blocks then pulling their fans over to the traditional stage rallies. And, you know, I'll be blunt, the traditional stage rallies are far more interesting from a competitive standpoint. They're a much more pure form of competition, far more interesting competition to me, because, you know, you just look at, you know, the snafu that was X Games last year when, just like you said in your article, you know, one over-adventurous dude in the back blows through and knocks everybody out of the competition, and they have to restart the event because one dude can't handle turn one.
You know, and that's my problem with all side-by-side type of racing, you know, especially when they're lining up, you know, four abreast, well, you know, starting grid, and they've got, you know, 600 horsepower from a standing start, and these guys are just all just, yeah, sprinting for that first turn. And yeah, arguably, whoever makes that first turn the best typically wins with Rallycross. But yeah, having a bunch of guys just taken out through no fault of their own, that they could be the best driver there. Mm-hmm. Because of some rookie, you know, or something like that. That it's really frustrating. It screws up the pace of the racing. And, you know, I like the sport from an action standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
It is exciting when they can get moving and everybody plays their part. But the only way they're going to keep that under control is with very stiff rules. There needs to be, you know, serious penalties when that happens. And I think even fines. If somebody does it twice, you need to fine them, because we don't want that happening again. We need to people to pay attention to what they're doing.
Threaten exclusion from races.
There you go. That
would work. For people who do it twice, you know, you exclude them from an event. Then following that, you line them up, you know, 10 foot back from everybody else at the start. Or something, you know, something that's substantive, you know, something that's substantial that, you know. But the fact of the matter is, you've got to make that whole shot. You've got to make turn one, because it's a five-lap event. And
they do better with that well, it's kind of interesting. It's like they've been experimenting with Global Rallycross here in the States. See, in Europe, they were doing 10 laps, I think it was. And the very last event they had here in the States was one done in Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. They did something like 10 or 12 laps as well, which was a huge difference. And the only problem I had with it is that damn jump again, because the suspension on those cars couldn't handle jumping that often and make it to the end of the race. There's a lot of people that had problems with that. Yeah. So they were just beating up the cars a little too much. But as far as length, I think 10, 15, 20 laps is probably about right. That allows people to spread out, you know, and then – maybe make them do the Joker twice or something like that. I think that would be a fine length, at least for the final.
Yeah. Yeah, you've got to be a little bit more judicious about how you handle these events. But if you can get the rules dialed in, like you said, if you can get the rules dialed in, you get the penalties dialed in so that it becomes a purer form of competition, it's beneficial to stage rally. Because you get the eyeballs seeing these guys at the state at the Rallycross event, which is accessible, which is something you can televise easily, and then those guys, you know, they compete at Rallycross one weekend and then move over the next weekend and run Rally America or whatever. They bring their fans there, and you know, it has benefit. But let's be blunt. You've got some big names, you know, star power names like Ken Block, and he's racing Global Rallycross, and he's racing he's racing WRC one event, maybe more if he can work them in, depending on what the GRC schedule turns out to be, and then he's racing Rally America. And where are the most eyeballs going to be on him? It's probably going to be the GRC stuff.
Well, can't get a television package for Rally America yet, so.
Yeah.
But, yeah, GRC's already got a deal with ESPN, and so ESPN2 at least. And, you know, that's obviously, it's follow the money, right? Follow the cameras, or the money follows the camera.
Mm-hmm.
That's what always happens. So, but, you know, I guess kind of getting back to, I kind of made two points with my article. One was, a part of it has to do with the cars, though. I think a lot of people in other parts of the country maybe that haven't been exposed to how awesome these small cars are with four-wheel drive and turbochargers. Mm-hmm. I mean, 0 to 60 in 2 seconds. 2 seconds. Do that in a motorcycle, you know? I mean, come on.
Yeah.
This is impressive power coming out of these things. And how they grip and how they can take those corners, you can't help but be amazed. But going back to your point about stage rally, it is much more pure. Yes, it's just the driver, co-driver, the car against a clock. That is a much purer form of racing. I firmly believe that people, when they first of all see how exciting these kind of cars are, they're going to be like, where else do cars like this kind of race? And then they find out about a local rally in their area, you know? I think they'd be intrigued to go out and see it, to see what it's like. You know, I think it's the cars can definitely draw in a certain crowd. But obviously the biggest key is going to be the drivers. If we can have drivers that do both types of events, Ken Block obviously is the one that's going to be doing it right now. I hope to see others cross over and do both. We just need to make sure that the global rallycross thing, there's a lot of traveling involved, and only those with big budgets are going to be able to do that. So it'd be nice to see a stateside version maybe of this rallycross stuff
mm-hmm.
mixed with the Rally America Series stuff.
Yeah.
And have that, you know, and not just they had some rallycross stuff they were experimenting with before GRC really was kind of doing its thing out at New Jersey Motorsports Park. And that was okay, but it was always just at the same place. It was never mm-hmm. anywhere yeah. else in the country.
Set up the cones differently this weekend.
Right. Yeah, exactly. You know, so, you know, that didn't quite do it enough. I think they just need to kind of spread it out. And I think it would be a big success. I think it would be a win-win for everybody.
Yeah. Well, good deal. So what's this about, Tanner Faust?
Or, no, actually, that was already about Faust.
Okay.
So he ended up winning that event. And so, like I said, he goes down to Brazil next to see if he can start working on defending his title in the GRC, instead of the European Rallycross Championship. But really, after that, it's actually about Dylan Van Way. He's the two-wheel drive guy that's in Rally America. He's got a new, this last year, I think I kind of mentioned something about it earlier, a Welshman for his co-driver starting this year.
Oh, okay.
And he's been learning about creating his own pace notes and that kind of stuff. Well, apparently, with some help with Ford and all that stuff, he is going over to Europe. He's actually there right now to contest some of the British Rally Championship, the BRC.
Jeez.
Yeah. I mean, names like Elfyn Evans, who won the Rally America or the WRC Academy, came through the BRC. He was a champion of that. So to get invited over or somehow get away to get the financing to do that, those events, that is just awesome. So I'm really expecting great things from Dylan Van Way. Unfortunately, that was supposed to happen this coming weekend, and this freak blizzard came through Wales and through Britain, and they've got feet of snow in areas. And this is in North Wales, where it's actually kind of mountainous. And they went and the organizers went and drove on the roads, and there's just so much ice and snow still there. They're like, there's no way this can melt away by this weekend, even if it warms up. It's just too much of it. And so they actually ended up having to postpone the event. They'll reschedule it for some other time. So he's going to miss out, unfortunately, on the first of the BRC events there. But it's really cool to see another American get over to Europe, just like Chris Duplessis got to do with some of the WRC Academy. This being, you know, just a British Rally Championship, not the Academy thing, which is now the Junior Championship or whatever they're calling it over there now. But you know, again, just getting American drivers that global experience where they can learn that better type of pace notes. Because I think pace notes are the key to becoming fast. I think that's whenever our drivers go over there, that's their biggest challenge, is creating their own notes.
Hmm.
So anyways, it's good on him for getting over there. Unfortunately, his first event was taken away by the weather.
Hmm. Okay, well, that wraps up the world of rally. I guess we're moving right into Formula One.
Yeah, and the surprise, surprise, the Red Bull driver dispute is still in the news. But Helmut Marko says that that problem is not existing anymore.
You know, this is great stuff. This came out on March 28th. Apparently, it was about 3 days too early, because Helmut Marko, who is the director of, he reports directly to Dietrich Mateschitz of Red Bull. He basically said, hey, here's the deal. Sebastian apologized in the press conference. I think that's the first correct step. There was a brief after the race in which there was relevant discussions about the race, and then there was a handshake between the two drivers. So for us, the issue is settled.
I'd like to point out, I'd like to take this time to point out to everyone about how the whole tradition of handshaking got started. And that is, two men would grasp each other on the forearm behind the wrist. And it was a process to make sure the other one didn't have a dagger in their possession.
You're kidding me.
No, that is how handshaking got started.
Make sure you're not going to kill me.
Yeah. And the reason Mark Webber did not feel a dagger on Sebastian Vettel's forearm is because it was already in his back.
Firmly planted.
I read this article here from Pit Pass with Helmut Marko, and I got to tell you, Mike, that is the biggest crock of bull I have heard in quite some time.
Yeah, I wonder, you know, if they have very liberal laws about pot in Austria as well, because apparently Helmut Marko, on his way to the speak with Dietrich Mateschitz, basically was smoking a giant blunt. I mean, there's no way around it. The drivers have shaken hands, so everything's fine. Right. See how that handshake goes? Okay, Mark, we know you're upset, but shake his hand. Shake his hand now. You got to do it. It's in your contract. Shake his hand.
Well, and the whole thing is in the article, he says that they didn't know about Vettel's tire situation and that Vettel had fresher tires than...
Oh, come on.
Mark Webber, whatever. That is just the cover-up that y'all are using to make up over the fact that Sebastian Vettel blatantly ignored team orders and passed his teammate.
Yeah, and because of this, you know, completely resolved situation, later that day an article came out that said that Sebastian Vettel came up to the Red Bull factory and apologized in person to every member of the staff.
Oh, right, yeah.
Oh yeah. Well, just a misunderstanding, you know, not a big deal. This is going to be fun. It's going to get play for a while. You're going to see it in the, you know, the F1 tabloid style articles that come out for a while. It's going to blow over, because let's be perfectly blunt, at the end of the year, if Vettel ends up winning the championship over Alonso by 7 points or less, you know, everybody's going to be saying, maybe it was a good idea he did that. And that's what he was thinking, and that's why he did it. Doesn't make it good. Doesn't make it better. It just makes it what it is. This guy's, you know, he's a German.
And did you happen to see Jacques Villeneuve's remarks on the whole situation?
Nah, I don't really care what Jacques Villeneuve had to say, but go ahead.
It was actually quite interesting, because he was talking about how that whole situation will have broken down the chemistry within the team at Red Bull, and he was likening it to the situation in 1982 on the Ferrari team between his father and Didier Pironi.
Yes.
And how Pironi did the same thing to Villeneuve that Vettel did to Webber.
Mm-hmm.
And Villeneuve promised that he would never speak, not only would he never speak to Pironi again, but he would never finish behind Pironi again. And then 2 weeks later killed himself in qualifying at Zolder.
Okay, yeah.
In qualifying, trying to pass Pironi.
Oh, jeez.
So, it was kind of an interesting little comment.
Yeah. You know, I hate to be this way, but Jacques, if you had I don't really listen to much he says, because the boy basically threw away a decent career so he could go drive for a crappy team, and continued to drive for said crappy team for way too long, and never wore a driver's suit that fit.
You mean his pajamas?
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, it was kind of funny. I was thinking of, I was at work the other day, and I was just thinking about stuff like that, and it cracked me up about how much of an opposite Dan Weldon was in his driving suit from Jacques Villeneuve.
Yeah, indeed.
Because Dan believed in having your driving suit obscenely tight. And Villeneuve, you could put like three Dan Weldons in one Jacques Villeneuve driving suit.
Yes, and have room for Jacques.
Yeah.
Is that a space suit or is that a driving suit?
Yeah, it's pretty much how it looked. I mean, yeah.
Other news from Formula One. It was
Jacques Villeneuve in his Snuggie.
Actually, it's funny you should mention that. That is going to be my Halloween costume next year if I have to go to a Halloween party, or this year, rather.
Nice.
I'm either going to wear a Snuggie or I'm going to wear one of those Forever Comfies, if you've seen that.
No, I haven't.
It's like the zip-up version of a Snuggie.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my.
And when somebody asks me what I'm supposed to be for Halloween, my answer is going to be comfortable. More Formula One news. Force India has renewed their deal with Mercedes.
No shock. It's just now we're starting to see the engine deals and, you know, transmission and basically the whole drivetrain deal start to get signed for 2014. Force India is going with Mercedes, which is no big surprise. Marussia's basically been saying they've been going back and forth between Ferrari and Mercedes. It's whoever will accept their bouncing check.
Can Force India just get a new deal on those wheel hubs for the tires?
See, I think they went out this past week and, you know, harvested them off their previous cars or something. I mean, really? So, you know, things are going to line up for the coming 2014 season. It'll be interesting to see what these two Cosworth teams end up, or excuse me, it'll be interesting to see what the Cosworth teams end up signing as far as engine deals. So, moving on from that, Thailand is proposing a 2015 Grand Prix. It would be a night Grand Prix. It would be, let's see, it would be in Bangkok, and the route would be including Ratchadominan Avenue, or whatever however you pronounce that, Denso Road to the Giant Swing, Wat Suta Temple, and then down to the Grand Palace and the Navy Club and all these wonderful locations. They've got some pictures of some of these in said article from Joe Sayward from his blog. Beautiful. And if it's going to be a night race with these temples all lit up, this is going to be a fantastic potential event. But it is just that. It's a potential event. You've got a lot of people that want to get on this calendar. You've got 2014. You're coming in with Sochi and New Jersey. You've got to kick some people to the curb before you can start adding a bunch more. So if Thailand's coming in at 2015, who's going off? I vote for Hungary.
I don't know. I see a lot of the traditional Formula One tracks mm-hmm. being booted for the newer tracks, and the newer tracks are nice, but you know, there's just something about some of those older European tracks though that's cool. But I mean, it's a catch 22 situation, because I definitely see the other side of it as well.
Yeah.
If those tracks aren't producing in the way of numbers, then they gotta go.
Well, it's just Formula One has outgrown those events and those locations and how much they can pay for the races. So do you continue to hold on to the tradition of running those races, or do you just move on and try and wow people with the glamour of the new locations? You know, at some point this business model shakes out and you find out if it's good or not. All it's done is grown, though, since Bernie Ecclestone really took the sport by the balls and managed it the way it has. So I think it's all going to be very telling when Mr. Ecclestone is no longer in charge.
Yeah.
You know, I can see them wanting to go to places, you know, especially in that area. Just, again, it's the emerging markets, right? Yep. It's yep. The growth in the world is in that area financially, and that's where the sponsors want to be, right?
Well, it's, you know, your car companies are seeing these places, you know, as these massive expanding markets. China is the number one automotive market on the planet. Every Far East economy right now is booming compared to Europe, which has been stagnant for decades. Eurozone and all of that really hasn't been the economic boom that everybody thought. In fact, the Eurozone seems to be doing everything they can to prop up some of their members.
What if we had a Cyprus Grand Prix?
I think that's it. Remember, that was like something we talked about maybe 3 or 4 months ago. Greece was talking about hosting a Grand Prix to, you know, spur economic growth and development in their country. And this was right on the heels of them.
You never make money with a Grand Prix.
No, no. All you can do is attract
tourism. Right. You don't make money. I mean, come on. Of course, then again, you know, you think about it, the way Greece has been running things. In their mind, you know, that's their idea of making money, is you just don't lose as much.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, well, maybe all those Cypriot euros can be cashed out of their bank accounts just so they can prop up a Bernie Ecclestone Grand Prix in Thailand.
Right.
Anyway, really not a whole lot going on in F1 as we wait. You know, we're in a three-week lull as equipment is moving by slow boat to China. I heard something very interesting this week regarding F1 teams and how they handle equipment. There are parts of their equipment that obviously it changes race by race. It has to be, you know, the chassis of the cars. You don't have, you know, six or seven different chassis. You have one or two for each driver, and that's it. And when you, you know, have major developments, you build another chassis. You know, you don't have a whole lot in that department.
Right.
However, say pit equipment, you know, the pit gantries and the pit wall, what do you call it? The the engineer's booths that they have right there on the side of the track. You know, all the stuff that teams use at every race that can be prepared well in advance and shipped, they do. Because shipping by boat or, you know, freight or whatever is so much cheaper than obviously loading the stuff onto a plane and shipping it by plane. So everything they can, they ship by boat. Meaning they may have six or seven different copies of their entire pit structure that they have at various different times of the season going to different races. So the pit equipment that you see at China is not the same pit equipment that they used the previous weekend. It'll be the same cars, but all the, you know, the pit gantries and everything, they're completely different sets, and they were shipped by boat, you know, 4 weeks ago.
Wow.
To that location. I never realized that. I just thought that was, you know, crazy. And worth mentioning. You want to talk about the cost of running F1, and you know, we're going to limit teams, you know, amount of people they can have on the ground at a Grand Prix, and we're gonna, you know, all this stuff. Maybe one of the biggest things you can do, especially for these flyaway races, is limit the amount of equipment they can take.
Right.
But, it's an interesting world, this F1 world. They spend a lot of money there, and it's all greenwashed because they have KERS.
Well, I remember many years ago when it was the FedEx, you know, Cup stuff with the, you know, with IndyCar. And, man, they'd be loading up the plane to head to Australia themselves when they used to run down there. And they used to always highlight that because it was FedEx, so I was shipping it, and all the stuff they'd pack onto that plane, or a couple of planes.
Yeah, every year when IndyCar made the trip to China, and when they did to obviously to Australia and whatever, you know, and when they go to Brazil, you know, they talk about, you know, we've got the you know, this much equipment we can take. You can take two cars. You can take, you know, da 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 da. And they just load up one giant jumbo jet with all that equipment. If that plane were to go down on the way over there, there would be no race for several months.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's very true.
So it looks like we've hit the end of our discussion for tonight here. Mike Shaw, do you have anything else you'd like to add?
Nothing really, just hold on tight and wait for the next event.
Mike Weissel, you got anything?
I'm happy that nothing is going on this weekend that will prevent me from watching good television.
As for me, like I said, just make sure you follow me for live tweets from Barber. So, gentlemen, I think that's going to do it. And everybody, I hope to see you again next week.
Okay, good night.
Good night.